This weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Why we weren't ready. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us, and here's what's coming up this hour.
Scientists have been warning of a pandemic for decades. We'll examine the reasons why the world was still caught off guard by this one.
On the tech front, the need for 5G for our phones and laptops in the COVID world.
More Americans aren't hiding the fact that they're doing other things while on a Zoom call. Hear how some are multitasking.
And pets are able to score new perks at the office these days.
Part of it is kind of a recognition of the, I guess, the support, emotional support that animals can provide, especially like during this time that's so stressful where people are working from home and they're teaching from home and they're parenting from home and everything is kind of happening at once.
Hillary Potkowitz at the Wall Street Journal on benefits for household animals on the rise during the pandemic. Scientists have warned of a pandemic for decades, yet when COVID-19 arrived, the world had few resources and little understanding. Betsy McKay, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal, has done a deep dive on the reasons why. Betsy, what did you come up with?
Well, we went back, more than 20 years to look at basically how the threat of a pandemic, and certainly the threat of epidemics, has grown over the years. And, you know, there have been warnings going back three or four decades now, ever since, you know, some of these new viruses, most of which come from animals, started reemerging. But we kept just going from epidemic to epidemic and making a few changes along the way, but not really taking a comprehensive approach and doing everything you need to do to prevent a situation like the one we're in.
So why is it that we wind up being reactive all the time, it seems, and not proactive?
Well, that's both a philosophical and a psychological question in addition to a policy question.
Okay.
Part of it is human nature, right? It's hard to imagine what could happen. But on a policy level, it's very hard to get governments and political leaders and scientific leaders to commit money and time to a high consequence, low probability event, as they call it. You know this will happen, is likely to happen sometime, you just don't know when, and the likelihood of it happening is at any given time is low. So people, it's something you can push off until tomorrow.
Yeah. We're speaking with Betsy McKay, senior writer at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece entitled "A Deadly Coronavirus Was Inevitable. Why Was No One Ready?" Some of the other factors you put together here, too, about funding, warning systems, the role of the World Health Organization, China's communication. I'd explain some of that.
Well, one problem is that as a globe, we never have really figured out how to, on an international level, prevent and respond to epidemics. The World Health Organization is the organization that does that, but they are way underfunded. I mean, like, way underfunded. And most of the money in their budget is earmarked for specific projects.
Yeah.
Polio eradication is a big one. And, a lot of the polio work does help build health systems, which also help you, detect other pathogens. So there is some crossover, but essentially, there's never been a, nations coming together and working together. And also, a lot of this preparedness work has to be done by national governments. But again, they're all individually under pressure. You know, they have budgets to manage, a lot of needs. You know, if you've got a big hurricane disaster to respond to right now, versus the threat of the sort of nebulous threat of a pandemic happening sometime, where's your money going to go? And that just keeps happening over and over.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right, so as we all know and believe at this point, I believe this won't be our last pandemic. So what about next time? I know there are lessons learned here, but do we put them to use and try to somehow prepare?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? I mean, some people say, you know what, now the world has learned and we will never make this mistake again. As a partial skeptic or a sometimes skeptic, I wonder, you know, when push comes to shove, we certainly will do more than we've done, but will we do enough? You know, it really takes changing the mindset. A lot of people I have spoken with who are in government and who lead these efforts have said, you really need to start viewing epidemic, you know, emerging disease threats as akin to a military threat, and you need to prepare for them in that way. So not sporadic funding, really need to invest in this as and view it as a national security issue, not kind of a side scientific issue and things will come along as they come along. It's really like war.
Thanks, Betsy. Betsy McKay, senior writer at The Wall Street Journal. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, a farewell to formal wear.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for joining us. After years of business attire becoming increasingly casual, the sudden transition to working from home for millions of Americans has undermined retailers that sell dress clothing. Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today, says dressing up is being dressed down. Nathan, what's trending?
I think that it's become pretty clear in the last several weeks that any retailer that relies heavily on business wear or what we would typically call office clothes is hurting. And it's really not a good story for companies like Men's Warehouse and Joseph A. Bank and, you know, Ann Taylor and Loft and really across the board. If you relied on selling suits or ties or dresses, this is not good news because we have seen a significant change in the way people are dressing for work over the last several months, obviously much more casually. And if you don't need a suit for the office, you certainly don't need one for, you know, for home. And now you may not even need to, may not even be required to. So that's bad news for these retailers.
Is this another example of the pandemic accelerating a trend that was already underway?
It absolutely is. And I think that's one thing it's important to note, that, you know, there had been a general casualization is the word that the industry leaders use going on in the workplace for really 5 to 10 years, maybe even longer, where, you know, in general, business dress codes have been relaxed. Obviously, there are still exceptions, but that had been going on for quite a while. But this just really accelerated that trend because no one's really expecting their workers to dress up a lot at home. And, you know, some people may have to be a little bit better for a Zoom call, for example. But in reality, a lot of us aren't dressing up. And that means that you're not visiting the store to buy that suit.
Boy, I didn't even think about the angle of all the proms that were canceled. So,
yeah,
you know, tuxedos or other wear wasn't being rented, you know, weddings. So, you know, no tuxes needed.
Yeah. A lot of retailers are even saying that this is actually a bigger impact on them than the work from home environment, that the loss of essentially business events or formal wear events, like you say, proms, you know, this fall, homecomings, probably not going to happen. That'll take a dent, you know, leave a dent for the formal wear companies. You know, Men's Warehouse and Joseph A. Bank, for example, had big tuxedo rental businesses. And even if you can do a wedding right now, you're probably not having as significant of a size of a wedding. You know, you may have pared down your wedding party, or you may be delayed it. So they're taking so many hits right now.
Speak with Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. He's got a piece that's asking the question, are dress clothes gone for good? What about the possibility of some of these retailers pivoting and then recovering somewhat with a different approach to you know, business attire.
Yeah, I think that they're going to try. I think they have to try. I mean, if you look at Men's Warehouse, for example, in the 90s, they shifted away from suits towards suit jackets, for example. So, you know, they made shifts before. That wasn't as significant, though, as what we're seeing now. And the problem is, these aren't fast fashion retailers. You know, fast fashion is this trend that's been going on in retail for several years, where companies like H&M, you know, were basically able to very quickly move on a dime toward new fashions, and they, you know, kind of move on quickly because fashions change so fast. But these are not retailers that are used to that. You know, Joseph A. Bank or Men's Warehouse, which are actually technically part of the same company, don't have much experience in that. You know, you look at Brooks Brothers, for example, which filed for bankruptcy several weeks ago as well. They, you know, famously invented the button-down polo shirt. So they've innovated in the past. That was more than 100 years ago. You know, I don't know if they're capable of changing on a dime now.
Boy. Anybody saying that we'll actually never go back to suits?
Well, you know, a lot of these retailers are holding out hope that we will bounce back to some version of normal at some point. And really, they're pretty aggressive about saying that they do believe that Americans will go back to buying dress clothes again once this is over. I don't know if there's a lot of evidence for that. I mean, it's possible that that's the case. Of course, we don't know when it's going to be over. That's a whole problem in and of itself. But when it's over, what if, you know, business returns, we go back to the office, but you can start wearing jeans? You know, I think that this is not necessarily a dress code that's going to pop back to what it was before.
How bad have the store closings been, by the way?
Well, we're definitely seeing, you know, hundreds of store closings. It feels like every month. And, you know, I know some of the projections are saying 20, 25,000 for the year. But for a company like Tailored Brands, which has Men's Warehouse and Joseph A. Bank, they're looking at up to 500 store closures at some point in the next couple years. And then, you know, Brooks Brothers looking at 50 at the very least, but probably more like 100. So it's, you know, it's definitely a very rapid fallout for some of these companies. And there will be some winners as well. I think the companies that had already positioned themselves to sell more casual wear, like a Chico's, for example, which has this White House brand that they sell for women's clothes. There are some companies that were ready in some ways. So we don't want to act like this is going to be terrible across the board, but certainly the fallout has been swift for anybody who relied heavily on work clothes.
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, a growing list of pet perks.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppies, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. In the past few years, more companies have been adopting pet-friendly workplace policies to attract younger workers. But how does a company display its pet-friendly bona fides when most employees are working from home? Pet perks that go beyond the workplace are becoming more important, especially given the recent surge in pandemic puppy adoptions. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
The new dependent in your house may not be your kids or your elderly parents. It might be your dog. As Hillary Potkowitz of the Wall Street Journal tells us, benefits for household animals are on the rise during a surge in pandemic companion animal adoptions. Hillary, how did this all come about?
Part of it was just looking at all of the pandemic puppies, like you mentioned, and over the past few years, there's been a real increase in pet-friendly workplaces. You know, a lot of companies are sort of competing, and there are lists that come out now, the, you know, 20 top 20 most pet-friendly workplaces. So I kind of wanted to look at what does it mean to be a pet-friendly company or a pet-friendly workplace when there is no workplace anymore, when a lot of people are working from home.
So what did you find about what companies are offering people who want to adopt or have animals already?
Sure. Part of it is kind of a recognition of the, I guess, the support, emotional support that animals can provide, especially like during this time that's so stressful, where people are working from home and they're teaching from home and they're parenting from home and everything is kind of happening at once. And so what some companies are doing is offering things like a pet adoption stipend, you know, of a few hundred dollars to kind of offset some of the costs of adopting an animal. Or they're offering things like paternity leave, you know, a week or so off to handle the rigors of a new puppy. And I think part of it, too, is kind of the recognition that not everybody has kids or not everybody's a parent. And so it's kind of trying to extend the benefits that they give to parents to pet parents.
Now, Hillary, early on in the pandemic, I read a lot of stories about shelters being overwhelmed by people who wanted to adopt or at least foster animals. Haven't seen quite as much of that lately. Is this a trend that's still going on? Do you know?
It's definitely still going on. I've talked to a few vets who say that basically just the supply of companion animals is still rushing to keep up with demand. I mean, it's, you know, people adopting from shelters or buying animals. But it's not just dogs, too. You know, it's cats. It's other kind of animals. I think it's just sort of a recognition that pets have really become family members, not just kind of accessories or, you know, furry friends that kind of live in the backyard.
We're speaking with Hillary Potkowitz of the Wall Street Journal. Along the same lines, there were concerns that when people do go back to work, a lot of animals will end up being surrendered because people don't have the same time. Are these perks something that would keep people happy and keep them with their pets, maybe?
Yes, I think so. A lot of what companies and people who work with, you know, in this space say is that there's almost no going back. Now that people realize the benefits of having their pets around during the day, they're going to want to continue doing that. So there's a sense that a lot more companies will become more pet-friendly once we all start going back to work.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Hillary Potkowitz. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, the need for 5G. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high quality, high potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon. One of the biggest problems for schools and companies trying to pivot to remote work and education has been connectivity. Our infrastructure just wasn't set up to suddenly shift massive amounts of traffic from companies to homes. Exacerbating this has been cable networks, where you have shared capacity because they were built with the idea that most folks wouldn't be using them at the same time. Rob Enderle, founder of the tech advisory firm The Enderle Group, says 5G might be the only realistic way to deal with these issues on a sustained basis. Rob, explain.
A lot of us are working from home right now. A lot of kids are learning from home, and that means your network connection has never been more important. Unfortunately, however, the cable and telephone wiring that we're relying on was never meant to handle this kind of load with everybody at home. In fact, a lot of us that have been working at home throughout this pandemic suddenly discovered when everybody else came home, our bandwidth went to heck. So the end result is we need a better, more reliable service, one that's not as aged, I guess, or as old as this one is, and one that we can rely on more and functions better during a time when a lot of us have to be online.
All right, so going from 4G to 5G, widespread 5G, I guess, would mean what? Like you were then driving a better car on a better highway? Like, what's the analogy?
Well, so the analogy is similar to if you're on a 4G device right now and you go to a wired connection, you get a big jump in performance. The same thing happens if you go to 5G. 5G approaches wire capability. It's much faster. And more important, it's much faster at the edges. 4G tends to drop off a lot as you get towards the end of the network. 5G does not. Also, 5G comes with something, at least here in the United States, called millimeter wave, which allows it to work, if it's deployed properly, inside buildings more reliably. So if you've ever been inside a building and suddenly you have no data connection, that's a problem that will be solved if millimeter wave and 5G is deployed inside that building. So the end result is you get something that's much more reliable. And one of the things, of course, we've discovered during this COVID outbreak is telemedicine. A lot of patients are being treated at home if they don't need to be on a ventilator, and that means they've got monitors that are connected to the network to make sure that if they do drop, if they're not being observed, and a lot of people can't afford to have people with them all the time, so that if suddenly their respiration runs into trouble, if their oxygen rates drop, somebody can be notified immediately. But if you've got a network outage, that's not going to happen. Now, most of this equipment does have cellular backup, but once again, 4G in and of itself is far less reliable. And so you've got a failure of your primary network, and then the secondary network is unreliable. You've got an issue. It reminds me of the guy sitting on top of the rocket at Cape Canaveral thinking that, all these parts were built by the lowest bidder. One of the reasons why I'd never want to be an astronaut. The result is with 5G you get something that better backstops you, whether you're talking about working or studying or healthcare. The 5G network is more robust, better bandwidth, and it will handle the kinds of outages that 4G struggles with much better.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece for TechNewsWorld.com entitled "The Essential Need for 5G in the COVID World." So, what about 5G rollout?
It's going slow. Unfortunately, COVID hit a lot of things, and one of them is it did hit the field crews that were deploying the 5G network. It has shown up in many city centers. Rural areas where it's needed the most is slowly coming up. My area has got a couple towers up now. But it's going slower than I'd hoped. By the end of the year, most here in the United States should have coverage. We'll see how fast it goes in rural areas, but as I say, since it's now being used to kind of address some of the other shortfalls in networking, the hope is that funding will be shifted over to deploy more 5G, because if you think about it, if you've got a wired connection, you have a weather event, much like the East Coast has been experiencing a lot of late, and it takes down the lines, your network goes along with the electricity, where a wireless network tends to stay up. The tower's backhaul is better protected. Plus, you can have a wireless backhaul on the towers to supplement the wired backhaul, and their battery backed up. So the end result is, even in an outage, there's a better chance that your cell phone network will continue to function even if your hardwired network does not. Particularly if you're talking about the last mile stuff. For instance, if your neighborhood's underwater, the cell towers that reach the network would still be able to function.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, how we've saved so much money during the pandemic. With the recent global pandemic, the way we work together seemingly changed overnight. And if there's one thing we've learned, it's that having access to the right resources is essential for adapting your business. But when it comes to finding the right talent, the process can be time-consuming, frustrating, and expensive. Whether you're launching your first business, scaling your current business, or in need of extra support to complete a project, find the quality talent you need instantly with Fiverr. With Fiverr's online marketplace, your business is connected to freelancers offering hundreds of digital services, including graphic design, copywriting, web programming, and more. And it's so easy. You can customize your search by service, deadline, price, seller reviews, and more. Plus, no more guessing games. You'll know exactly what you're paying for upfront. No negotiating needed. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order using my code Gordon. All the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Americans have been saving lots of money during the COVID-19 crisis. You may have heard us report that the savings rate, the portion of monthly income that households are socking away, hit a record 33.5% in April. It's down near 19% now, according to the Commerce Department. But what's notable is that before the pandemic, Americans were squirreling away an average of just 7.5% of income. In-depth analysis from Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, how do you see it?
So yeah, the numbers are impressive, but it isn't really that Americans have a newfound commitment to saving. It's just that they are having problems spending. People aren't traveling, they aren't going out to eat, and it's all because of COVID-19. I mean, nonetheless, it's great to see Americans saving more money, and clearly, if this economic slowdown drags on, it's going to be good to have that cash on hand. But I wouldn't suggest that this high savings rate, you know, reflects some newfound frugality among the typical American. Mm.
I was going to say, so along those lines, I thought maybe you were going to say they're scared and are therefore saving, but maybe that's part of it, but that's not the full reason here.
I certainly think fear is part of it, but I think the inability to spend because people aren't traveling, because they aren't going to concerts, because they aren't eating out is probably the biggest driver here. And for those who say, well, this is good news, well, yes, it is good news. We also have to think about how this savings rate is distributed. And while we can't tell that from the Commerce Department numbers, you know, my hunch is that we're seeing high savings rate among sort of middle and upper middle class families. And among those people who have found themselves out of work, you know, they're not saving this sort of money. I mean, they're living, well, you know, hand to mouth because they no longer have a paycheck and they're relying on unemployment benefits. So while, you know, the middle class may be sitting there feeling pretty flush because they're not spending, for a lot of people who are in financial distress, these high savings rates are not necessarily a good sign.
Mm. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. We're talking about the savings rate for Americans jumping up during the coronavirus pandemic. We did see consumer spending up a little bit. I think the latest numbers maybe were from June. Does that indicate we don't like to sit on our savings too long, or we are willing to spend it?
I think if Americans are given the opportunity, they will indeed spend this money. But in the meantime, they do have this cash hoard that they've accumulated in recent months. And so the question naturally arises, what should they do with that? And if I have managed to accumulate some cash in recent months, and I'm looking out there at the economy and saying, well, things are pretty dicey. Maybe I'm going to lose my job, or maybe the economy is going to come back quickly. So what should I do with my cash? And what I would think about doing is using that cash to set yourself up for rough economic times. And what do I mean by that? Well, we've already seen a substantial pay down in credit card debt. This is one of the consequences of the high savings rate, and I think that's a great thing to do. You know, if you later find yourself out of work, you can always charge things to the credit card. Again, it's not advisable, but if you have to do it, you have to do it. So paying down credit card debt is a great way to prepare yourself for rough economic times. Similarly, if you have an income such that you qualify to fund a Roth IRA would be a great place to put this cash because one of the unique features of Roth IRAs, your original contributions to that Roth can be pulled out any time without taxes or penalties. As long as you don't touch the account's investment earnings, that money can be withdrawn. And thus, if you fund a Roth and you later find yourself out of work, that cash is available to you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. 13 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, multitasking on a video call and not being ashamed.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Is this you while working from home? More than 5 months into the pandemic, people are dialing it back on Zoom. Exhausted by days jam-packed with online meetings, many are giving up the pretense of a boundary between work and private lives. Instead, Sean Lee, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says they're using video conferences as chunks of time to do things like garden, walk the dog, watch TV, and even exercise. Sean, what have you found?
Yes, I've been finding that we're now several months into the pandemic and people working from home, and that essentially a lot of people are giving up the facade that working from home is the same as working from the office. So, of course, dress codes are relaxing, but also people are cramming in a lot of chores and other tasks while they're on work video calls. One, because they can, because I think things have gotten a lot more relaxed with working from home. And also, two, I think in general, people are just kind of saying, like, if I'm going to have to work from home, I'm going to make it work with my life, which means I'm going to multitask.
Boy, how about the people who try to exercise? How do they pull that off? Do they like pause the video, or they choose to not go on video at the time?
So I think in general, they will turn their video off. A lot of them don't necessarily put themselves on mute, but they'll do something that's a more quiet form of exercise, like yoga.
Okay.
One woman did tell me that she put herself on mute, shut her camera off, and actually on the other monitor took an exercise class with her personal trainer.
Wow.
While on a work call, which I thought was actually very impressive, multitasking.
I was going to say, because some of these workouts, you might be huffing and puffing, maybe not so much with yoga, but that would sound weird, I guess, if you were, if you were suddenly called upon to respond to something, and here you are out of breath because you were doing some cardio.
Exactly. the interesting thing is I find that the etiquette of video calls and Zooming to be interesting, because everyone has their own idea of whether they should keep their camera on and off. Some managers I talked to said they prefer, their employees to keep their cameras on just for that connection and to make sure they're paying attention.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't like that. So.
Understood. I was perhaps most impressed by that, I think she was a chemistry PhD student.
Mm-hmm.
who couldn't reschedule either call. They were both critically important, and there she is doing two Zoom calls at once,
and both of them required her to be on camera.
Jeez.
At the same time. It was amazing. And then at some point, both her research group asked for her input on the research, and the conference where she was speaking asked her to speak. So she finally said, I had to just fess up and say, I'm actually on two calls at once. Excuse me from the research group, and let me answer this question on the conference.
The video call etiquette that you referenced before seems to be changing almost by week or by month. So it's acceptable now to do these types of things. I think you talked to, the San Jose City Council president says he does laundry?
Right, the Fresno City Council president. He said, he's quite formal normally, and he started out the pandemic wearing a suit and tie on every Zoom call, no matter what, even if it was internal staff meetings. And now when I talked to him, he said, I'm literally in t-shirt and shorts.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Lee, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, trading a hairpin for a house.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
We'll finish up with this. A California woman who began a trading challenge with a hairpin says she won't stop until she trades for a house. 29-year-old Demi Skipper of San Francisco says among the unlikely trades she's completed are a vacuum cleaner for a snowboard and an iPhone 11 Pro Max for a Dodge minivan. Sky News says under the rules of the challenge, she is forbidden from using cash or trading with anybody that she knows. Ms. Skipper, who works for a restaurant reservation app, said she sends out around 1,000 messages early in the morning and late at night when her life is all trades, as she says. Her hairpin, which she said was just the smallest thing in her home, was exchanged for a pair of earrings and then a set of margarita glasses, which were in turn bartered for a vacuum. The project nearly ground to a halt when the minivan broke down shortly after it was driven across the country to be delivered, and she was forced to trade it for a $2,000 electric skateboard. Her success has gone viral with millions of online followers on TikTok and Instagram. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.